Aaron J. Kernis is a Pulitzer Prize-winning composer. He studied composition in San Francisco, Manhattan, and at Yale.
Kernis employed rigorous compositional processes until the early 1980s, when a growing sense of intuitive freedom became increasingly evident in his work.
From 1990, his style took on a new transparency and emotional eloquence. He is as happy incorporating Latin rhythms and rap into his music as he is paying harmonic tribute to the Romantic masters.
And Aaron J. Kernis appears as part of ASO's Composer to Center Stage initiative, which continues a commitment to advancing new music funded by the Andrew W. Mellon Foundation. The program is in its third year of a three-year collaboration between the ASO and several nationally acclaimed and emerging composers.
It's a great pleasure to welcome Aaron J. Kernis to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Great to be here.
So you have been, your ties with the orchestra are they're strong, and they go back quite a ways.
They do. In fact, when David Miller was the conductor, and I can't even remember how many years ago, was this 25 years ago, 20 years ago, his first job at the New York Youth Symphony, they began a commissioning project, and I was one of the first composers, and so we worked together then, and also when he was working at Minnesota Orchestra as well. Because I've been working with Minnesota for over 15 years or so. So this was just a great opportunity, and he called me one day and said, you know, come up and be in residence for a while and mentor the composers, and we'll record a piece and perform some pieces. So it's been a very nice and compact little run here.
One of the most famous names in public radio is Jay Kernis. So when I saw your name, Aaron J., who was a major vice president at NPR, I saw, and a great guy, I saw your name. I said, God, what are the chances? Have you ever met him?
Well, the funniest thing is a review in one of the New York papers appeared, and one of his colleagues at work cut up the review, and so the review had said a fabulous piece by Aaron J. Kernis, and they cut up the review and it said a fabulous J. Kernis. And he read the review and called me, and that was the first time we were in touch. And we met, and we tried to figure out, because his family went to Chicago and my family went to Philadelphia, and we couldn't quite figure out where from Lithuania, which different boat they'd taken, and he's a lovely guy, and we'll figure it out someday.
Did he end the conversation by saying, I'd rather be in Philadelphia?
When you come and spend time with the orchestra and do the mentoring, composing, obviously, let's start with the mentoring process of what your role is with the other composers throughout a season. How does that work?
Well, this actually is very specific, because I was here a month ago and really am here this week, and the concentration is this week. So I assisted in choosing the pieces that are being read this morning, and also was involved in developing the series of sessions that those composers are going to take part in the next few days. They'll be working with someone about public speaking, speaking from the stage, and from what I could tell from Jeremy, he was fantastic.
Yeah, I think so, give him an A.
And the other two are very, very mature as well, so I'm not concerned about that. I'll be talking with them about their pieces. They'll be talking to the orchestra and have some discussion about promoting their music. So a variety of things over the week.
What did you think of his analysis of the benefits of being a composer and being in the academy at the same time?
I certainly agree that for musicians, for composers, that the greater they'll be, their ability to be flexible and to be in a variety of different situations, to perform, conduct, analyze, be a teacher, all of these things. This is sort of how you make a life in music now. You, you know, try to do everything well, at the very least for composers. Compose well, but have your fingers in many things so you're competent and capable.
Can people make enough money at this?
It's not easy. It's not easy. For my first years, I relied and was very lucky to get a series of grants and residencies to live various places. So I was very transient. Mm. And then gradually, you know, I was a clerk in a record store for a while. I did all sorts of odd jobs. Wow. And then gradually more commissions came in, and I became able to live on that in a combination of teaching and residencies.
So the piece that the orchestra will play on Saturday night, part of the festival orchestra concert, was that specifically commissioned for this concert?
This piece called Valentine's actually dates back to 1999, and it was written for the Minnesota Orchestra and for soprano Renee Fleming. And the orchestra will be recording it. Part of the grant that I'm involved in provided money for recording from the Mellon Foundation. So they're performing, recording it on Sunday. And it'll be the first time it's recorded. And the gorgeous young soprano named Talise Trevigne, who we're working together for the first time. And it's on a very exciting concert, I think. My piece is extremely colorful. It's a series of love songs, but full of kind of very detailed French, kind of late Bergin kind of textures, very expressive, very emotional, and on a program of very dynamic and vibrant and exciting other music. So it's a great week, very exciting week to be featured on.
So we could say that Mellon paid for this piece?
Well, the commission came from Minnesota Orchestra, but they are funding the recording. And
neither of you guys see where this is going? Piece of Mellon?
Oh.
Are you going to do this all morning?
I'm afraid so.
Well, excellent.
I have other food pieces that would be more conducive to that joke.
Are you when you come out of this? I'll ask you the same question that I asked Jeremy of when you come out of this. What do you hope to have accomplished?
Well, this is a piece that is 11, 12 years old, hasn't been recorded before. I feel it's an important piece of mine that hasn't been heard very much, and so the document of the recording is very important. It'll be the cornerstone of a whole CD. That's number one. Two, working with a fantastic young artist who's wonderful, one young soprano. Continuing my work with David, getting to know the musicians, getting to know these young composers. That's just the tip of the iceberg,
right,
of what this week has been. So.
In the soprano, did you choose her?
Yes.
Okay. And what goes into that actual decision of finding, this is the person that speaks to this piece of music that I have composed?
Yes, I listened to her recordings. I saw her perform. I did not see her perform live, actually, just on videos.
Yeah.
And she has a kind of radiance and just a kind of persona that I thought would be perfect, and a voice that I thought perfect for these texts and the music.
I was talking about somebody the other day with this, and in the old days you went to an opera,
right,
to a recital, and you would see somebody who was rather large singing, and you used the word, beautiful. Have we seen a transformation of what people look like who sing opera and who sing arias and this kind of work?
To a certain extent, I would see that there are still various physical types that are in opera. I mean, a lot of singers need really, big, strong lungs to project. I mean, the opera houses are so much larger in the 20th century than ever before in history. You just have to project so much in these halls, be able to fill them. But in terms of physical type, I almost feel like ever since the a few years ago, there was a controversy about Deborah Voigt not being able to fit in a dress,
sure,
and all that.
We've interviewed her about that.
It did make me wonder, in fact, that singers maybe are a little bit more concerned about their, their physical appearance, and is that going to have an effect on their lung capacity? I don't have an answer to that yet. As I said, different physical types. You see thin, you see wide, you see whatever in the opera world, and it requires all types.
You are you'll be heading over to the reading session, mm-hmm, and are you a fly on the wall, or are you very instrumental in that? Your work's sort of done, isn't it?
Not really, actually. I'm going to be following the scores during the rehearsal. I'm not going to get in the way of what the composers have to say to the orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
And what I expect to do is, after it's all done, meet with them separately, talk about what worked, what didn't, maybe be involved in the discussion with the orchestra at the end, and hope that I can give them some advice about, you know, and some camaraderie about what worked well and what could be improved.
Aaron J. Curtis is involved in the festival reading session here at the American Music Festival in just a few minutes, as well as the festival orchestra concert on Saturday at 7:30.
It's great to meet you.
Thank you very much. Aaron J. Curtis, a great pleasure. You're listening to The Roundtable live from MPAC in Troy. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.